Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Late in December, at the last meeting of Coburg Council prior to Christmas, a delegation from the Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective presented a proposal to build 12 units and supporting services on Furnace Street next to the old Memorial Arena. The proposal will cost about $250,000. This includes the construction of the cabins plus the operating costs for a six-month pilot project. The money will come from fundraising and contributions from the people living in the cabins. There's a lot in this report, and addressing homelessness is a complex issue. On today's show, Megan Sheffield, a volunteer for the collective, will unpack this proposal in detail. I'm so pleased to have with me today Megan Sheffield, a volunteer with the Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective. Welcome back to Consider This.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be back.
Before we get too far, for those who might not know, what is a sleeping cabin?
Yeah, so a sleeping cabin, as we've proposed it, is an approximately 8x10 cabin that is heated and insulated with a bed and space for some belongings, where a person who is currently chronically homeless and living unsheltered would be able to make their home. We envision a kind of village of 12 of these cabins with a set of shared kitchen and washroom and, in an ideal world, laundry facilities that are shared among the community, but each person has their own private space in one of these small cabins.
How big would a sleeping cabin be in terms of square foot?
Yeah, each one is under 100 square foot. So if you look at an 8x10, it's about 80 square feet.
Last month, the Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective presented a proposal to Coburg Council. You suggested 12 of these sleeping cabins be built and located on Furnace Street next to the old Memorial Arena and adjacent to the Curling Club. Now, let's start with why 12 sleeping cabins? Why not 10 or 8 or 15? Why 12?
Yeah, I mean, you're right that it is somewhat arbitrary, just in that any number of these would be an improvement for folks who are currently unsheltered in our community. Based on the amount of space that was there and the kind of mock-ups of the site that our team was able to do, and also the fact that we were coming with a proposal, we did think it was important to settle on a number for the proposal, and so that's what we landed on based on that particular site and our knowledge of the need currently in Northumberland.
Now, why Furnace Street?
Yeah, well, we had looked at this land inventory that Coburg town staff had prepared of sites around Coburg that are municipally owned that they thought fit a number of criteria to make them good candidates for affordable housing. And in this case, the site at Furnace Street was also, it was designated as being a good spot for affordable, transitional, or emergency housing. Another thing that came to mind when looking for a site is the way that it would meet the practical needs of the residents who were to live in the village. And so for you know, to access any number of services and, you know, anything that a person might need without a vehicle. We were looking kind of at Elgin Street and South in Coburg. And so this, you know, this kind of fit in there in terms of access to pharmacies and grocery stores and, you know, government service buildings and that sort of thing. So there was that. And then the other piece was that the Canadian Firefighters Museum, which is going to be the next tenant of the former Memorial Arena, they had in their application indicated that they felt that their tenancy there would actually be a good fit with affordable housing, and they sort of shared that goal and felt that their needs for parking, for example, wouldn't interfere with an initiative to support affordable housing on the same location. And so that felt like a lot of pieces falling into place. So I think that's the main reason that we decided to you know, make this proposal for that site at this time.
So what impacts do you think the project will have on the neighborhood?
Yeah, well, one thing that I love to mention is that I actually live in this neighborhood. I live within about 200 meters of the Memorial Arena. And so when it, you know, this very much is in my backyard, and as a neighbor, I feel really good about having this project right here in my neighborhood, in part because I think that bringing more stability to more members of the community is going to have a collective improvement on well-being. And I think that just as people we know, you know, through research that being unhoused and with its associated impacts on people's mental and physical health, that people are put into really difficult positions and can engage in risky or criminalized behaviors. And so I think that as soon as someone has more stability, they immediately have a set of choices that were not there while they were unhoused and trying to survive outdoors. And so I think that's something that benefits everyone in the community. Also, we have been, you know, in terms of having conversations about this project with people who are currently unhoused, some of the folks who are interested in moving in and becoming residents of this project have lived in this neighborhood for a long time, have lived within just a few hundred meters of this specific site, and lost that housing and have, you know, been surviving outside and you know, relying on, you know, shelter services and that sort of thing to get by ever since. But they see this as a homecoming. So I think there's a lot to that, you know, people have a lot of questions, and there is a lot yet to be seen in terms of what this will actually look like and how the neighborhood will be involved. And I do know that this is not, you know, this is not the first affordable or transitional housing development to you know, to move into a residential neighborhood where there's already homes and businesses. And there's actually been a lot of research on that subject.
Well, I'd like to talk to you a bit more about that, because Transition House has had impacts on its neighbors. And there were concerns raised in the past by the neighbors dealing with people who are staying at Transition House. Now, have you spoken with people living in the neighborhood about your proposal?
I have not personally. No, we have not done specific consultation. And part of the reason for that is that the Ontario Human Rights Code actually has some governance when it comes to consultation on types of housing, because basically because housing is a human right and people are entitled to housing without discrimination, there are some consultative processes that can lead to human rights violations. And so the Ontario Human Rights Council actually has advice for municipalities, for example, about how to engage those, engage community in ways that focus on areas of conversation that are outside of that kind of discriminatory aspect. And so I think it wouldn't also be appropriate to consult with the community until there is a better sense of what will actually be happening or what site is in question. So
when I think about, and I'm sure listeners think about this, maybe thinking about this as well, is that, you know, you witness that there's been vandalism at the public washroom on Albert Street. And there have been people for some time now in social media and at meetings, public deputations saying people, they feel they don't, it's not safe to go downtown because they don't feel safe anymore. So I guess what I'm trying to ask you is that, you know, is this project going to really reduce crime, or is it really just going to move it somewhere else now to, say, the Furnace Street area?
Yeah, I think what I would say to those concerns is that a washroom or a bus terminal is not a home. A downtown is not a home, you know, a church alcove is not a home. And that when we create a safe space for people to be who have no other place to be, that makes other people safer. And so I do think that more people will experience more safety, including the people who we know are most vulnerable, who are the people who are living outside. Overwhelmingly, research shows that people who are unhoused experience the greatest levels of crime and are far more likely to be the victims of crime themselves than people who are housed. And so I think that this will be an initiative that brings safety to everyone in Cobourg.
I'd like to talk a bit about the budget that's in the proposal. You talk about raising $162,000 to cover capital expenses in the range of about $157,000. You also, in the proposal, talk about an operating cost of $96,000. And all of this is for a 6-month pilot. So the combined total cost is going to be about $250,000. That's a lot of money. Can you explain what that money is going to go towards and why it's just such a large amount?
Yeah, so much of these is about, because it's a capital project, it's a building project. So the bulk of the project expense is in building the facilities. And then, as you say, there is operational costs, and some of those are the site services that we talked about in terms of the washroom facilities and waste removal, that sort of thing. There is a plan to have like a site supervisor staff position. So that would be an expense as well. Our costs, interestingly, are very, very close to the county's cost for the overnight warming room that runs from December to March. So anyway, that's just an interesting kind of correspondence there. We have, I don't think that we are underestimating the cost, and I also don't think we're overestimating. We've tried to be really realistic. You know, there's costs included in terms of what it might cost to dismantle the project entirely and to have, like, you know, an a possible
end of, you know, so we build them and then we, you know, we may need to dismantle the project and move it elsewhere and that sort of thing. So we've tried to build contingencies into this budget as well.
You mentioned already about the cost of the warming room being $250,000 as well. It's rather surprising just how much all of this does cost. I mean, when you think about the warming room's like, what, 4 months? And it's only at night. And there are some day services, I guess, offered as well. But your proposal is another $250,000 for 6 months. And the numbers are just astounding. And no doubt these people need our help and deserve to be sheltered. But there may be some listeners who might wonder, is this the best use of money and resources?
Yeah, I certainly think that providing adequate, appropriate, affordable housing is long term the best use of money to address this issue, and the problem is that's not available right now, and in the meantime, our neighbors are outside and living rough or in and out of shelter services. And there's a price tag that comes with that for the society as well, that is, you know, not spelled out on a budget that's submitted for public review, but has, you know, certainly has been studied in the province of Ontario. And so the cost when it comes to ER visits, for example, is quite astronomical because of the physical toll of living outside, and the cost of bylaw officers and a new bylaw safety enforcement truck to you know, surveil and engage with people who are living outside, that comes with a price tag for the community. And so I think that in the long run, projects like this one that provide a stable space from which a person would have a chance to build a better life for themselves is actually going to be a less expensive option than the sort of emergency responses that we're currently relying on to address unaffordable housing.
I guess the question then becomes, you know, is it sustainable? Because you're only talking for 6 months. And I realize that there's the capital expenditure of creating the cabins, but you've got almost $100,000 of operational expenses. And if it was to carry on. So is it sustainable in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think our goal in terms of pitching a 6-month pilot project is to have the opportunity to prove that it can be successful. And that success will lead to, there's a lot of energy both within the community and from different levels of government to that really see the benefits of this project and the simplicity of it. In spite of that cost of the overall budget, the concept and delivery is actually like pretty pared down. And so I think it is sustainable long term, and I think that this will prove to be something that the community experiences the collective benefits of and will really get behind.
I mean, there's no doubt that having 12 sleeping cabins is better than having none. But the last homeless enumeration report done by the county in 2021 showed that there was 166 people without permanent shelter. So how, first of all, is having 12 cabins addressing that in a meaningful way? And second of all, how are you going to pick the people who are going to live there?
Yeah, great questions. I think that this is a little bit of the starfish and the sea, you know, the old man in the sea with the starfish, where it makes a difference to each one. And so that's often a driving motivation for me, is that it does make a huge difference for even one person to have a place that is safe and secure, where they can lay their head each night, and that has ripple effects for the community beyond that one person. And so if it can be 12 individuals who are experiencing that stability and support, then all the better. I think, as I was saying, I think that the scale of homelessness in Coburg right now is such that 12 people moving, you know, from chronic homelessness and living outside into this project, it will be noticeable, will be felt. I do think that that makes a difference. The fact that there are so many people in, you know, on the county's point in time count is, you know, should be really motivating for all levels of government to be doing something really long term, and to provide housing for everyone who lives here.
So how will the oversight of this project take place? In other words, I know you're working with Greenwood Coalition and the Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective together on this, but are you going to be in effect landlords then, or how does that work?
My understanding is that this wouldn't be a landlord and tenant relationship, but rather it would be like program participants in a program that is being administered by Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective, which is a special project of Greenwood Coalition, and so is governed by their volunteer board. So Greenwood Coalition will handle like donations and tax receipts, fund distribution as well, and also the oversight of things like the finances and signing contracts and insurance, that sort of thing, but won't actually be a formal landlord.
Okay, so how does it work then? And say, for example, somebody's causing a problem. I can't imagine what problem that might be, but say somebody was causing a problem to an extent that maybe people are feeling that they shouldn't be there. I mean, is it the same as a landlord? Do they get evicted, or is there some disciplinary thing that happens, or how does that kind of thing? I mean, when you get people living together, there's always, you know, certain tensions. So how do those things get dealt with if it's not a landlord tenant thing?
Yeah. So there will be formal processes in place, and those are not set in stone at this point. We do have, a management and governance structure that is formalized, but in terms of the actual procedures, but certainly there will be agreements that members are asked to agree to make with each other upon moving in. And although housing first is a really important value for this project, and I think we all really, you know, we'd hate to see it, ultimately there would be some option in place in terms of if there was a need to remove someone.
Well, I guess, you know, we just lived through a rather horrible storm and saw how brutal winter can be. And there are people that are continuing to live unsheltered. How quickly do you want to see this get into place? I mean, is this something that we're going to see any result on this winter? Or is this something that, we're thinking farther down the road and maybe into the summer or fall later in the year?
Well, I know that there are, other partners, including the town of Coburg, who have a role to play here. And so what I would say is we would hope for the sooner the better, because our neighbors and our collective members are having to suffer through a Canadian winter with very few options. And yeah, we would love to see something safer and more stable as soon as possible.
So what are next? So what are next steps then for you?
Our next step is preparing for and attending that meeting with Town of Cobourg development staff and to begin that process of looking at this particular site and what the site needs are and what our responsibilities are as an organization and to see if that's the right spot. Safety is our number one, and that drives the whole thing. And so we think that this is a safer and better alternative to a tent. And we want to make sure that that's the case. We would love to have it, be a really well-functioning, successful project. And so we do understand that that takes time. And that's what our next steps are, basically, is to look into making this a reality on this site at Furnace Street. And step one will be meeting with the town staff early in January. We have a date set and we're looking forward to that.
Megan Sheffield, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much, Robert. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for your interest.
That was Megan Sheffield, a volunteer with the Northumberland Sleeping Cabin Collective. Sheffield noted after the interview that the group has spoken to the Curling Club using the Jack Heenan Arena, which is adjacent to the proposed Furnace Street site. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.